You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network is presented by WynnBET. WynnBET is now live in Colorado, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Tennessee, Virginia, and Arizona. From boosted parlays to in-game odds on every major sport, WynnBET has what you need to win. Sign up today to receive a $1,000 risk-free sports bet. Download the WynnBET app now or visit WynnBET.com and start winning today. We're also brought to you by PropSwap. PropSwap's America's marketplace to buy and sell sports bets. Check out the new PropSwap.com and use promo code SGP on your first deposit to receive up to $500 in bonus cash. And next, we're brought to you by Prediction Strike. Prediction Strike is the only performance-based sports stock market where you can buy and sell shares of professional athletes. Use promo code SGPNMMA to receive a free athlete share with your first deposit of $20 or more. And finally, before we get to the episode, do not forget to download the SGPN app. It's your home for all of our free picks and podcasts right there in the palm of your hand. Download it wherever it is you download apps.
Howdy ho, Generinos, and welcome to the MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network, episode 86, the spookiest episode, because we're coming to you on the spookiest day of the year when there's ghosts and goblins and ghouls out there. So, of course, this episode has to be dedicated to the person we secretly dedicate every episode to. That would be the devil himself, of course. Hail Satan. The person here laughing is my satanic worshipping associate host, which we'll get to very, very shortly. I would be Jeff Fox. Hello, how you doing? We had a really good night last night with our picks, so we want to get right down to it. Hopefully everyone listening tailed us on our picks and had a very good night also. I'm talking about UFC 267, of course. Before we get to that, if you're listening, hopefully you're listening to us on our feed, MMA Gambling Podcast feed. If not, make sure you subscribe to that, because that's where you will get this podcast as soon as it drops, rather than having to wait a day or two for it to make its way onto SGPN, because we have so much good content on that feed that we have to wait a turn to get out there. All right, as for my satanic worshipping, unless he corrects me, I believe that's true, worshipping associate host, I think he's a flat earther too, because he didn't correct me on that when I mentioned that a few weeks ago, so I guess that sticks too. He is the only man who can go 10-4 on his picks and still get his ass kicked by me. What else can I tell you about him? He crawled out on Volkan Ozdemir, branch, and it snapped, and he broke his neck and got beat by me. So you may know him as the Danimal, or Gumby, or as I call him on Twitter, Dumby, ha ha ha, for that pick he made. He is the prettiest purple belt on the planet. He is son of, what's the name? Son of Ichabod.
Ichabod.
Ichabod the Bear Whisperer. He's the one and only Daniel Vreeland. Hello, Mr. Vreeland.
So a couple of things. First of all, viscerally, just as a reaction, I had less of a reaction to you saying that about me than saying the flat earther thing, which I don't know what that says about me as a human being, but that's the first thing. Second of all, we're going to get into talking about Volkan Ozdemir. I'm still saying not the worst pick I've ever made.
No. Not the worst.
And we'll talk about why in a second, because it was wrong, but in like, I would still say that if I saw the same Volkan Ozdemir who fought, let's see, who can we say he fought? Who fought Misha Cirkunov, who fought Dominic Reyes, even the one who fought Anthony Smith, I think I would have taken to beat Magomed Ankalaev in the way that Ankalaev fought last night. But the weird-ass version of Volkan Ozdemir that sometimes shows up, like, against Ankalaev and Alexander Rejcic, and, like, I mean, I feel like it's come up a couple of times. It's just so weird, and it's bad. And as a result, he's somebody we now fade for the rest of our lives.
There you go. Yeah, it wasn't so much the pick; it was the your conviction and emotion behind the pick. Which
it's mostly just because I was fading Ink Alive. I don't believe that. Like, I saw a couple of people tweet afterwards, and of course, we'll get more into his fight when this one comes up. I saw a bunch of people tweeting like, "Oh, Ink Alive is instantly a title challenger." Were you impressed by him in that fight? Did you think like, "Oh, this guy"? Because I watched it and I was like, this looks like a guy who knows how to barely do enough to win a fight against a guy who doesn't want to win.
Oh, boy, you're salty. So salty, yes. He looked good. Not particularly dangerous, but he looked good. If Dan sounds different, he is at an undisclosed location. Do you want to let people know where you are, or you want to keep this a secret?
Yeah, no, I can share. I'm at game 5 of the World Series right now, so by the time this hits your ear, the Braves may or may not have clinched the World Series with me in attendance.
So I've been
making like Braves references on this show for a while now, so it doesn't sound like I'm a bandwagon guy, which is kind of nice.
How long have you been a fan, Dan?
I was a fan when my Braves T-ball team, because I was on the Braves for a T-ball team when I was 3 or 4 years old, and then I found out the Braves were like a good baseball team, and then I could just root for the Braves in both T-ball and real baseball, and that was enough to sell 4-year-old me.
That was right around the time where my Toronto Blue Jays were beating the Braves in the World Series, right?
I think it would have already happened because that was 91. 91.
No, it was 92, 93, or 91, 92. Oh, I'm not a very good fan, am I?
So I would have been 3 or 4 then. So yeah, right around that time.
No, have you the most important question? Have you been practicing your racist taunts and shops and everything, Dan?
Oof.
There's my first oof.
There you go. We needed an oof to kick off the episode. Right. Yeah, no. Yeah. No comments.
I'm not going to get Dan into trouble. No. I got him enough trouble. he's saying he worships Satan and the earth is flat. So we probably should get to the fights because Dan has some do they tailgate at these things? Dan has tailgating to do.
I don't know what they do. I've never been to Truist Park. This is going to be my first time to Truist Park, which is a hell of a time to get a first crack at it. But, so I've never been to it. So me and the missus are going to check in there as soon as we finish this episode and edit it and kick it out real quick. And then I will see – maybe I'll report back on Wednesday, which, by the way, you should listen to Wednesday's show as well.
Definitely you should. All right. You also should go to WinBet. Ready to win money and boost your odds? WinBet is now live in Arizona, Colorado, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Tennessee, and Virginia. Not Georgia where Dan is, so unfortunately Dan cannot get into WinBet right now. We're bringing the excitement of Win Las Vegas to online sports betting and casino play. Exclusive rewards right at your fingertips. Get in all your favorite teams, players, and sports from NFL, NBA, MLB, NHL, golf, MMA, WNBA, college football, and more. Plus, if that's not enough, they've got some bonuses for you. We've got some bonuses for you. New users can bet $1 to win $100 in any sport. Plus, you can get up to $1,500 as a free bet on WinBet if you make a first deposit of $20 or more. Wow. Whatever your first wager is, WinBet will match it 200%. So the math on that would be if you bet $100, you get $200 free bet. Max wager is $750 for that. So they'll match it $1,500. And Dan is going to use his bonus on betting the Braves to win the World Series tonight. Right, Dan?
Nope, we never jinx them in such a way.
I know. I always try to. I jinxed them for game, two was it when I jinxed them?
You did jinx them for game 2.
I'm trying not to say too much. but WinBet, they got great promos, odds, and payouts are happening right now over at WinBet. For boosted parlays to live in-game odds on every major sport, they have what you need to win. Ready to play? Sign up today to receive a special offer, risk-free $1,000 sports bet. Bet big. Win bigger with WinBet. Download the WinBet app now or visit WynNBet.com. All right. UFC 267, fun event. Lots of – actually had some things that actually matter for a change. We just talk about meaningless fights, whether they're fun or not fun, but whether we made money or not money off it, but there actually was some consequential fights last night, including someone winning about – inexplicably, Glover Teixeira is the second oldest. Notice they kept saying he's the second oldest UFC champion ever, but they will not mention who the oldest is because
he's related to PFL. And was he Bellator for a little while, or at least he was doing promotional work for Bellator, right? He was Fightmaster. Oh, Fight yeah, Master. Remember Fight Master?
Yeah, I do. I never watched it, but yes, I remember the name.
Did you know one Fight Master? Fun tangent here.
You probably know. It's like Tufts. You would know. Who?
Joe Diesel Riggs.
Oh, wow. Yes, I do. I kind of remember that. It's true. No, I think the main reason is Couture is one of those fighters who actually has a backbone and will stand up to the UFC, and as he's done over the years. So he is persona non grata on the telecast, as is mentioning fighters with COVID. They just mentioned that they have health issues, struggles. Like Amanda Ribas had health struggles, and Chimaev had health struggles. But yeah, so it's getting like WWE, like they have Vince McMahon in the ear telling them what they're allowed to say. So you're not allowed to say Randy Couture, you're not allowed to say that someone actually got COVID, and they probably got COVID from going to your event. So, but other than that, yeah. So back to Glover. Yeah, wow. Like we keep mentioning how old he is, but I think I pointed out last podcast, he's only 4 years older than the man he beat, Jan Błachowicz. So Jan Błachowicz, there's a lot of misconceptions about him. First, like that he's young, and he's not. He's 38, which isn't really young for a fighter. And heavier weight class is not a big deal. Plus, he likes to state that he has Polish, famous Polish power, but he really doesn't. 8 knockouts in like 28 wins. He's got more submissions than knockouts. So he was talking about how his Polish power left him yesterday, but he really didn't have Polish power to begin with. He's had a few knockouts as of late, and we thought he could knock out an old guy like Glover, but he's not really a knockout dude.
I think he does have knockouts. I think he's almost reinvented himself as a guy who gets knockouts later in his career. Because if you go back and you look at those early losses he had in the UFC, right? Because he did. At one point in time, he had lost 4 or 5, which, again, an amazing story for Jan Błachowicz to have gotten the title in the first place. A more amazing story about Glover Teixeira, who we'll talk about in a second, but you know, like if you look at those losses he had early on, it was because he had tried to wrestle Jimmy Manoa and it didn't really work really well. He had tried to sort of wrestle up Patrick Cummins and it didn't work. He lost a majority decision to Patrick Cummins and he got out grappled by Alexander Gustafsson. Like, I don't know how many people remember that. He was actually winning on the feet against Alexander Gustafsson, and then Gustafsson took him down a bunch of times. I think he used to be that submission guy that we remember so well, and he did pick up submissions after that, right? He got Devin Clark, although that was by standing rear naked choke, which is weird as hell. But I think at that point realized that, like, just going to the ground all the time with guys wasn't the way to win. He doesn't have the wrestling to do it. These guys in the UFC are not the same guys he fought in, you know, KSW way back in the day. I think he reinvented himself as a power puncher, and I think he has always had that power. He's just been reluctant to go to it for probably the exact same reason as we saw him lose this weekend, is that when he goes to it and it doesn't work, he looks a little bit on the tired side because it's exhausting to throw big-ass punches like that for that long. In addition to that, it leaves him open to be countered, and it leaves him open to be taken down. And Glover took advantage of both of those things, which is wild to think about, but I would pump the brakes on not saying he has power. I just think he has not been the type of person to use it for very long.
No, but maybe fair enough, but all of his recent knockouts have come against people who get knocked out, though. Dominic Reyes gets knocked out. Corey Anderson gets knocked out. Luke Rockhold gets knocked out. So.
Yeah.
But
Luke Rockhold really gets knocked out.
He really gets knocked out.
He's been knocked out in some of the most spectacular fashion. Between that Jan one is really good, and the Yoel Romero one is just an execution, which is pretty fucked up.
Yep. All right, so thoughts on Glover. I guess Jan really messed up. I don't know why he would want to, like, try to get fancy on the ground with Glover, but he did. And, yeah, he tapped immediately, so Glover obviously had him.
Yeah, I would say this. It seemed like that. I think the reason he shoots for that Kimura and the reason why he goes to his back and the reason why he taps so fast is the punch of Glover landed. Landed flush and he was woozy. I was talking to one of my buddies earlier this morning who said that it reminded him a lot of Nate Diaz, Conor McGregor. Everybody was like, Conor quit too early. Conor looked like shit on the ground. Conor doesn't know how to grapple. Conor got hit on the feet by Nate Diaz. And to some extent, you could say a similar thing about Conor in the Dustin Poirier fight, too. the trilogy fight is that, like, he got hit, so he, you know, shot a takedown, or, you know, jumped a guillotine. So you were like, why would he jump a guillotine there? And that's the reason why. So, yeah, I would say bad choice on his part. For Glover, on the other hand, what are we doing next for Glover? I mean, I think the Jiří Procházka fight is the one that everybody's saying is going to happen next. Procházka weighed in as a replacement. I want to say that, like, Procházka has this, like, supreme boxing advantage here where he should light Glover up on the feet. He's also more aggressive than Jan Blachowicz. And I'm not sure it fucking matters. That's the worst part, right? Like,
yeah, who knows?
Glover could just take him down and submit him, too, because that's – I mean, like, this whole run – I'm not sure I've picked Glover once in this whole run he's had because I've just been like, well, he's going to get punched really hard by Anthony Smith, by Thiago Santos, by Ion Cutelaba, by Nikita Krylov. And, like, he's just taken them all down and beat them within an inch of their lives. Even the Carl Roberson fight, I wasn't sure about picking him because that Carl Roberson fight, like, Roberson is good in the clinch and has got good elbows and good knees. And I was like, Glover's going to have to stay away from that. And he did, and he took him down and submitted him. So, yeah, it's just such an interesting story. It'll be interesting to see how long it lasts. But it almost feels like when it ends, it'll be the end of his career. Do you feel that way?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. That's what Superfan Zhang was saying on the SGPN Slack board, which everyone should get in because it's lots of fun. He was saying, what, one more fight and then he's done? Because I guess he's expecting Jiří probably will beat him.
People love Jiří, but again,
yeah.
I mean, like,
he's more dangerous Jiří for sure than Blachowicz.
He has the same advantage as Jan Blachowicz, and in addition to that, you're right, he's more aggressive and he's probably more dangerous. But he's also a little sloppier. You know what I mean?
Like,
he gets wild in there, and sometimes that leads to a takedown.
Yep. No, he's definitely more wild, which is why everyone loves him. He's definitely ripe to be taken down and submitted, for sure. He's not as safe as Blachowicz, but he's also more dangerous. So we'll see. Who knows? All bets are off now. Glover's champ, which is unbelievable. So Piotr Jan is kind of a champ again. I forgot he was the champ. I forgot he was the champ to begin with. I was thinking that the Aljo fight was the fight for the vacant belt, but he beat the hell out of Jose Aldo for the belt. So
he defended it against Dominic Cruz, remember?
Yes. I forgot all that. So anyhow, he's still a bad, bad man. Corey Sandhagen is – this fight pretty much went exactly how we expected. The main event, not so much. We lost in that pick, minus 290. So Glover was a very sizable dog for whoever had him. But the co-main event for the interim UFC bantamweight belt pretty much went the way we expected. Corey Sandhagen, very tight, basically takes the first round, or this is the narrative, at least the companies were putting out there. He takes first round to process everything and take in all the info, and then he takes apart his opponent more and more as each round goes on. That is pretty much how it played out.
Yeah, I would say, for me, first of all, I actually didn't think Corey Sandhagen just won the first. I gave him the second, too.
It was a toss-up for sure.
I was sort of surprised that none of the judges did. Like, I expected it to be 48-47 on at least one or two judges' scorecards, and then it just wasn't. That was surprising to me. I'll also say, this didn't go exactly like I expected. I am really surprised that the person who was wrestling was Corey Sandhagen, in that Piotr Jan didn't seem to ever try to trip him or take him down. It's especially weird to me because Corey Sandhagen was having so much success at the beginning. But, yeah, I mean, like, it went mostly as expected. Piotr Jan, super dangerous striker, really fun to watch. Another really heartbreaking loss for Corey Sandhagen, who has to have gone into both of these last two decisions thinking, like, he has to have thought he won both of those, right? Like, I know he thought he won Dillashaw. I thought he won Dillashaw. It was, if you said he won one and two, which I do think he won, five wasn't that far apart either. I wouldn't be surprised.
No.
As if Sandhagen thinks he won 1-2-5.
Yeah, no, that's for sure. It was a lot closer than it appears on the scorecard. Plus, I would say it's probably a lot closer than it appears watching it, too. Like, it appeared that Jan was pretty much dominating the fight, but they are, it's doesn't really make sense, but it's scored round by round. And if you score it based round by round, should have been a closer fight than the judges actually allowed it at the end.
Yeah, and I will say this too. Like, you're right. He was in the big shots, and I think that that's what people take home and remember. But, like, I also don't think that, like, I don't think Sandhagen was not doing damage either. Like, I think some of those early shots and some of those flying knees, I think they hit with enough power that like, he was damaging Piotr Jan too. So, yeah, disappointing to see him lose again. Disappointing that Piotr Jan has to fight Aljamain Sterling again next, right? Like, who wouldn't rather see him fight, you know, Dillashaw or Font or Sandhagen? I'd watch him fight Sandhagen again, you know? Like that.
Yeah.
I think we're going to see this god-awful rematch, and Piotr Jan probably just manhandle him again.
And who knows when, too, because Sterling just had surgery, so...
Well, that would be good news if we don't know when, because that might mean... And I'm not a TJ Dillashaw fan. As a matter of fact, he's one of the few drug cheats that I am willing to sort of stand out there and say what he did was so inexplicably wrong and unabashedly wrong that I have no love for the guy at all. But I would still rather see him fight Piotr Jan than Aljamain Sterling.
Yep. Very true. So we had bonuses given out already. Glover got a performance bonus, and then this Jan Sandhagen very justly won fight of the night. So we got that one right. Wasn't a huge payday. Minus 240. It was my lock pick, though, because I was pretty sure of it. So 41.67 based on $100 bet into my lock earnings. So I'm at 18 and 10 for the year. I'm still down about $45. So not so hot for locks. We also got the next one right, minus 700. We better have gotten it right. Islam Makhachev very quickly submitted Dan Hooker. Not much to say about this. It pretty much went the way we thought it would, maybe a little faster than we thought it would. And Islam is a scary dude.
Yeah. I would say the only thing that was maybe a little bit different, I didn't think he'd get the sub so fast. Right. And it was interesting to me. You know, we talked about the narrative of Dan Hooker possibly having, like, increased wrestling because he had increased offensive wrestling last time. It very clearly didn't translate to the defense, or Islam is just that good. Let me ask you this, though. How do you feel about Islam Makhachev in a title shot? Do you think he's next for the title?
No, probably not. having Habib in his corner definitely helps matters. But I think it really depends on what happens with Gaethje and Chandler.
What happens with Oliveira and Dustin Poirier. Because if you get some sort of combination of winners there that have recently fought, you don't want the rematch, right? Like if Oliveira and Michael Chandler both win.
Right.
Yeah, we're not rolling that back. So then we'll probably get Oliveira versus Islam. So yeah, Islam's probably on standby if he's a better matchup.
Yep. And the more than likely we're going to get we're not going to get Oliveira Chandler, but you know we could get Gaethje versus either guy. Like they would do.
Yeah, Gaethje Oliveira.
Yeah, and they would do Gaethje. Poirier again.
Chandler.
Yep. Yeah, or Poirier Chandler, so all that. So we seem to hit on this often, but Makhachev's kind of, he's one of those guys, he won, probably got the biggest win of his career, and he's kind of in limbo still, near the top. He hasn't changed at all in the performance rankings that are on at MMA-Manifesto.com. He's still behind the champ, Oliveira, Gaethje, Poirier, and Dariush is still behind him, which is what I hear some people mention could be next for him, Beneil Dariush versus Islam Makhachev.
Yeah, that was my pick. I think he just is on standby in case one of those bad matchups works out. You know, like I said, Oliveira and Chandler win. They're not running that back anytime soon. So if that happens, then I think he jumps in. But otherwise, I think Beneil Dariush is the right call.
And we're in the middle of a massive run I had last night. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I got 8 straight. None of them for massive paydays, but I got 8 straight, and Dan got 7 out of 8. So
it was not a good day for underdogs. Glover,
it was not.
And depending on where you got the line on Michael Olszewczyk, who a lot of people had him. They said by the time I got to fight and he was actually a favorite. So for if you were looking just as the numbers when the night actually kicked off, there was actually only one underdog who won, and it was the very last fight of the night. Very chalky.
Yes, crazy. So Makhachev got it. Alexander Volkov minus 300 beat Marcin Tybura. Went exactly the way we expected, pretty much. 3 rounds to none. One ref had it 2 rounds to 1. I don't know. Not really much to say about this. Volkov's kind of like a gatekeeper for the top five of the division, I would say. He's not as good as the guys ahead of him and better than most of the guys coming up behind him.
Yeah. And it, for me, that's just his limited ability to stop takedowns. Like he can against a guy like Marcin Tybura, but can't against a guy like Curtis Blaydes. And that's always going to put you in that weird limbo of, you know, being ranked somewhere between 4 and 7.
And then Khamzat Chimaev, apparently he's over his health issues that they claim he had, which was really very bad COVID. Minus 550, just destroyed Li Jingliang. Even picked him up and walked him over to Dana White and told Dana to stop looking at his phone and watch his fight, and then slammed him down and proceeded to beat on him and then choke him unconscious. So I might be willing to say the hype is real now.
Yeah, I mean, he beat somebody who had the right kind of skills to stop him. Although I will say, again, Li Jingliang, probably not a great defensive wrestler. He's given up a lot of takedowns. We saw that to Neil Magny. I am interested to see what happens with Khamzat Chimaev against a guy who's a great wrestler, but no longer am I saying he needs to fight like a wrestling-based guy outside of the top 15, and now I'm thinking, like, what would he do against Gilbert Burns? What would he do against Marvin Vettori? You know, like, I'm thinking about those things now, which means he's clearly for real. Also, I saw this suggestion thrown out there. I can't remember who did it. It might have been an MMA lock of the night, because he gives some pretty good matchmaking suggestions. And I don't want to claim this as my own. Is there any reason the UFC shouldn't book Khamzat Chimaev right now as the late replacement for Luke Rockhold against Sean Strickland?
No, not at all. He likes to fight frequently, too. So that would involve... And plus, he wouldn't have to cut weight because that would be up at middleweight. So I probably would prefer to see him at welterweight, but he seems to be comfortable bouncing between either. So, sure, do it.
Well, and also, I also just think, like, if he's going to do the short notice thing, which it seems like he wants to do, right? Like, he wants to fight every 2 weeks or 3 weeks or whatever. He shouldn't be cutting to welterweight all the time. No. I, too, am like a divisional purist. If you're going to be a welterweight so that I can see where you are. If you're going to be a middleweight so I can see where you are. This whole, like, ranked in two division stuff, not for me. But, like, he is a unique case. And I don't like making exceptions for just one guy, but, like, he's an exception to fucking everything right now.
Sure is. And it's not like he's been handed cupcakes. They've gradually increased the level of his opponent pretty much every fight. He's gotten a little bit
better. Yeah, way you should. The first two were real bad. You know, like the two he beat in like a weekend were real bad. You know, like no offense to Reese McKee or John Phillips, but they just no takedown defense. They found the guys with the worst takedown defense they could find. But I mean, Gerald Meerschaert, we just watched him beat Mahmoud Muradov. And like Li Jingliang is no joke too. He knocked out Ponzinibbio. So Chimaev, you got to imagine, is going to be probably a top 10 welterweight come Tuesday.
He is top 10 in the rankings I run on the site, MMA-Manifesto.com. He's jumped up to, actually, he's probably ninth now, because he's gone barely ahead of Stephen Thompson, and he's gone ahead of Jingliang. So, yeah, I think next time I do those welterweight rankings, he should be around at ninth. So, very impressive performance. And I believe, like I said, the hype's real, and him... here's a stat. You probably know it because you seem to know everything except for I stumped you last episode with some regional MMA stuff, but international regional MMA stuff. That's how deep you have to go to stump Dan. But how many times has he been hit in his UFC career? Chimaev, that would be. So, four fights. How many times has he been hit?
So if you're talking significantly, it's one. And
yes.
If you're talking about total, it's two. He's taken two total strikes, but only one was deemed significant, which is, I mean, dude, it is wild. And to do it against, you know, like, to do it in a 14-second knockout, that's one thing. But, like, he fought John Phillips for two rounds, right? Like, John Phillips survived the first against him and was submitted in the second. Like, and still he only took one punch. It's incredible just, like, how quick he gets in on you. And I actually think his head movement is pretty good. You know, like, again, we still need to see it against somebody a little bit better, and we need to keep seeing it against somebody better. But, like, I think it's there. I think the basis for it is there.
Yeah, and he's kind of like if Damian Maia had that massive killer instinct. Because remember, Maia had a long run there where no one was touching him striking-wise. But he's not, other than submissions, he's not as scary as Chimaev, who can beat you pretty much any way he chooses to.
Well, Damian Maia had that thing where he was like, I don't want to punch you. I want to win every fight without punching my opponent at all.
Yeah, he did that too. Yeah.
Yeah, which that clearly is not the case with Khamzat. Khamzat is very comfortable punching you.
Exactly. And then let me get to where Dan slipped up. I kind of think like you do it on purpose just to you slip up at least once a week just to let me keep the lead on you because you respect me so much. You want me to be able to hold this over you, right? To beat you in the money and beat you on the picks every week. But Magomed Ankalaev, who is apparently now Dan really, really hates because he screwed him on the pick here. Beat Volkan Ozdemir 30-27, 29-28, 30-27. You were asking about Ankalaev earlier. He looked, obviously the precision was there, took him apart like a surgeon. He didn't look dangerous, I guess, is kind of what you were implying. People saying that he is a immediate title challenger. Well, it is light heavyweight, so could he beat Glover Teixeira? Sure. Who knows in that division? He's not a didn't look like a killer in there as Dana White likes to say, but the way he picked apart Ozdemir was you can't not be impressed with that. Ozdemir did not look good. He looked a little soft too, like his body looked a little soft. So I don't know if that's age or if he's getting beat up or what the case is, but. Yeah, you got this one wrong, Dan. So account for yourself.
I did get this one wrong, but I will say this. So first of all, you know, I do think he picked apart Ozdemir. I'll give you that. His striking looked better than I said it would. I'll give you that. His grappling looked as bad as I thought it is. Right, like he shot a bunch of takedowns that he tried to get Volkan Ozdemir to the mat, and he failed. He failed emphatically to get Volkan Ozdemir down. Like he is that stereotype. Typical Russian who we all assume has really good takedown offense because his last name is Ankalaev or his first name's Magomed, whatever stereotype you want to go with.
Magomed, I'll go
but
with.
But like, yeah, I guess you're right. Magomed sounds like a better wrestler than anybody with the last name Ankalaev. But like, he can't get opponents down. He's having a really hard time, including like he had trouble with Nikita Krylov. So in addition to that, like I don't think his striking looked untouchable. Like you're right, he did pick him apart, but it was largely because Volkan Ozdemir looked afraid, right? Like he didn't throw anything. And for me, that's what the problem with Volkan Ozdemir. That's why I'll take the L here on this one, because like ultimately, like Volkan Ozdemir is known for his punching power and his quick knockouts. Like he needs to be able to hit people, and if you don't throw punches, apparently you can't hit people.
Yeah, no, that's definitely the case. So I don't know what to do with Volkan at this point. Like I said, he's I think he's pretty, maybe not shot, but maybe has been exposed that he's not the bee's knees, as the kids say in the 1920s.
He's 2-5 since he got his title shot, which is worth noting.
Correct, yes.
And the only win, or one of the only wins, is that Alexander Rajic won, which he didn't win. Alexander Rajic won that fight, and the judges inexplicably gave Volkan Ozdemir a split decision. So, like, if we're using that revisionist history, since he got a title shot against DC at UFC 220 in Boston back in January of 2018, he's only knocked out Ilir Watifi and then just continued to get beat. Like, man, yeah. Dude, maybe he is not – like, I don't like writing people off, but, like, yo, he'd probably look good in Bellator's next light heavyweight Grand Prix.
Very true. Very true. And like I said, like, not the body shame, but he looked a little soft, too, around the
he's always looked like a thumb, though. He looks like a thumb.
Yeah, I guess so. That's true. A thumb. Yes, he's a thumb. Very good. Very good point. So that wraps up the main card. Pretty exciting main card. And the picks came through for me. One, I was, 5-1. Dan was 4-2. So hopefully you trailed us in that. Like, none of them were big, huge payouts unless you are, like, super fan Jong and you put, like, 17 units on I think we may have talked him out of doing the 17 units, and Calm said within the distance, so we may have cost him some money, Dan.
Well, it sounded like in the Slack channel, he still must have had some sort of, maybe not 17 units, but he still had some sort of number there.
He
did quite well for himself.
I think he kept adding to it.
You were right, buddy.
Yes, you were right. We were wrong. And then a referee screwed him out of another pick he was asking about earlier. Earlier in the night,
man,
which we will get
to. That's going
to
be a wild one we're going to talk about.
Yeah. Let's tell you about PropSwap first. We're brought to you by PropSwap, America's marketplace to buy and sell sports bets. The MLB playoffs are in full swing. Oh, are they? Or are they over by the time you hear this, everybody? And PropSwap is your home for the best World Series futures. All season long, PropSwappers have been finding the best odds in the country because you're buying directly from other bettors like yourself. Use promo code SGP on your first deposit, and PropSwap will double it up to $500. Double cash means double the odds. If you love sports betting, you need to use PropSwap. Every ticket purchased on PropSwap can be resold at any time, so your bet doesn't need to win in order to make money. It just needs to improve. Thousands of bettors across the country are shopping for tickets on PropSwap every day. Get started today by going to PropSwap.com or download the PropSwap app. PropSwap is where America buys and sells sports bets. So is this your first Braves? I guess you probably saw Braves games, away games, right?
Yeah, I've been to like 100 Braves games in Fenway. Because I'm crazy. Like my anytime they played the Braves for interleague play, my dad used to make sure he could get me to a game. And then, obviously, since interleague play is no longer a thing and they're just, like, constantly playing interleagues, I've seen a few since then.
You're a good dad, Ichabod. Good job, Ichabod, getting games.
He took me to see Andrew Jones hit a grand slam back in the day. It had to have been, like, 97 or 98.
Nice.
And both my brothers, who are Red Sox fans, were, like, devastated.
Take that, Red Sox. Yeah, you and your brother were getting ready to watch the World Series together, right, Dan? How did that go for him?
Ooh, it didn't go well for him.
No.
and that's why my wife's here instead of my brother.
Exactly. All right, let's move on. Prelim card. Let's say hello to everybody's favorite, Amanda Ribas.
Hello.
Oh, she says hello to us, too. Isn't that nice?
It's so funny, dude.
She's such a treat. Like,
it's so funny that people dislike her. How do you dislike her?
Oh, they do?
Yeah,
I don't know how anybody could dislike
her. She takes a bunch of heat on Twitter. Like,
whatever.
They find her, like, annoying or whatever. But, like, yeah, I guess that's true. Who cares about Twitter? But, like, she's delightful.
Oh, yeah. She is, like, I have to admit, I fell into a rabbit hole of watching her say hello a million times. And there's, like, a 2-minute video of her laughing. Like a whole bunch of
cuts. Oh,
that crazy cackle. Wow. Yeah, she sounds like a chain smoker. Wow.
Then when she won the fight against Virna Jandarova, did she not say in like the post fight interview that you had to go to her?
Yes.
You had to go to her Instagram to find out what she was going to say next.
No. You had to go to the like the backstage interviews, and then.
Oh right.
And it wasn't really important. It was she wants. She wants one of her friends who had visa issues to get another shot at Contender Series, and she's willing to fight at 125 or 115 before the end of the year. But anything she says is I'll watch. I guess I think the kids call that a simp. I think I'm a simp for Amanda Ribas.
I think it's just a stan unless you're overly attracted to her. So I think I think you're
I'm too old to be attracted to her. Yes, she's like could be my daughter. So I can't say I'm a.
She really young.
No, she's actually not that young. She's 20, just turned 28. So I know far too much about her apparently. But so I'll have to use the M&M term, Stan. I don't know about that. I don't know if that's gonna fly with me. I'm not a real fan, Dan. But anyhow,
you don't write those. I get that reference. There are so many kids nowadays who don't know that that's what Stan means too. That it comes from an M&M song.
Yeah.
Wild.
But yeah, he's probably right in your wheelhouse for your age group, right?
Yeah, I mean, I was not an Eminem guy, but my little brother was.
Yep, makes sense. All right, well, we're all fans of Amanda Ribas, or you should be, not just because she's delightful outside of the cage, and yeah, and she was so surprised that DC was in the cage too, like after the fact interviewed her.
Done the first 6 interviews.
everything she does is so hilarious. But anyhow, she was all. I thought none of that was going to happen because she was all business heading into this, like me mugging and everything. But I like Jan Dodoba too. Also, I don't want to put her down in the least, especially her hair. I love her hair bouncing around. Can she see when she's in there? It's kind of like a sheepdog. You wonder, can they actually see?
It seems like a shaggy dog in there. It's almost like the Benson Henderson thing.
Clay Guida thing, yeah. So anyhow,
hey, did you see that? I thought of you during the broadcast when they talked about her nickname Karakara, which you
I got it wrong.
Yeah, you had previously said is face, which I think it loosely does translate to face, face, but it's like a bird in Brazil. Bird,
yes. Well, the bird looked pretty good in the first round. Even like. Thing I worry about is Ribas is she's extremely tough, but she does get knocked down. Like she bounces right back up, but that's 2 fights in a row that she's been knocked down on her feet with strikes. And Jan Dodoba is not a striker, so that concerned me. But then Ribas turned it on round 2 and 3, just picked her apart on the feet. And this basically went exactly how we said it would.
Amanda Ribas' judo went exactly how we said it would, because that was the big game changer, and we said that it would pretty much rest on that, whether or not her judo held up and could stop the takedown. And it did. Her judo looked exceptional.
Yes. And her striking was on point, but it's probably getting better every fight too, which is good to see. So she got the job done, -160 over Jan Dodoba. Like I said, I like watching both ladies fight. Jan Dodoba, it's encouraging that she – her striking is improving also every fight, and that she knocked Ribas down, which no one's done other than Marina Rodriguez. So I think at least in the UFC. So that's impressive. Do you have someone in mind for Ribas next?
No. So it's weird. My gut reaction was to say I'd like to see her fight Mackenzie Dern, because I would like to see her try to defend the Dern. And then I remembered she beat Mackenzie Dern already. Which I think people forget, because it was earlier. I think it was when we first wrote Mackenzie Dern off, and we said, Mackenzie, oh, she must suck. Like, she can't take down this girl, and once she can't take her down, she's out of ideas. So, I mean, like, I always pair people with Yan Xiaonan. Nina Nunes.
You like to say the name.
Nina Nunes wouldn't be a – you know what would be a kind of an interesting one is Tisha Torres would kind of be fun for her.
Yep.
Because I'm not sure she'd be able to keep up with Tisha Torres's speed.
Yep.
And it would be interesting to see if she wanted to take Torres down, if she could take Torres down. It would bring a lot there.
Yep, very true. Would you be able to take Amanda Ribas down, Dan, or would she judo throw you?
I'm pretty sure she'd judo throw. Judo is a
– really?
Dude, I also you asked that question as if I can a whole bunch of people. I can't calculate the actual number of jiu-jitsu tournaments I've been in. It's probably in the 35 to 50 realm of tournaments I've been in. I have gotten one takedown ever because usually I just sit to guard or jump guard or wait for somebody to blast double leg me to get into guard, because I just work off my back.
You're Ryan Hall.
I'm pretty much Ryan Hall with less leg locks and more go-go bladas.
Yep. There you go. All right. So yeah, that was a fun fight. We got it right, which makes it even more fun. Got the next one right. We pretty much got every fight right. Okay. We'll just put it that way. I even had people thanking me on Twitter, which is nice. Thank you, people who listen and thank me for my unbelievable picks.
Really good when you guys do that, by the way. Do that all the time, because I got one of those too. Somebody patted me on the back for the Caceres win. I wish I could remember who it is, because he interacts with me all the time on Twitter, and I appreciate it, but I don't ever look at anybody's name. So the person who thanked me for Alex Caceres, thank you for thanking me.
Yes, it is very nice. Zubera Tukugov, you can thank us for this. This was Dan's lock pick, -175. So Dan hit it. What did you win on that? Like 57-14. But if you bet $100 with Dan, bets a lot more than that, right? because your Lord, Lord and Savior Satan tells you to, correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
All right, good. We're getting it all out there. So anyhow, Dan 16 and 13 for his locks, down $384.
Time to turn that around.
Yeah, it's true. You better, then you got to pick some bigger than minus 175 locks then. But this one, like I tend to keep saying it, but pretty much went the way we expected, right? 2-1 over Ricardo Ramos was, I smiled when he hit that spinning elbow. I'm like, oh, here we go. Dan's been crapping all over him for
that spinning elbow.
Like spinning elbows, and here we go. Hits a spinning elbow and busted up Tukugov. But yeah, it was a good fight. Judges got it cracked, you know. Fun to watch. Right guy won. I don't know, not much else to say, really.
No, and you're going to say essentially the same thing about Duraev versus Kopylov. Right decision, yep. Kind of fun to yep. watch. Maybe very little to say about it.
There, you just did it. We're done now. Wasn't he the hairy guy though on the contender series? Because he wasn't hairy last night. I thought he was the hairy
guy. I
don't
think he was hairy.
Okay, different guy. I'm thinking of him.
I'm thinking of the heavyweight that was kind of weirdly flabby.
Yes, true. My son probably compared me to him, yes.
Exactly.
Duraev, wrestling looked very good. Was quite impressed with him. He my son said, whoa, look at that guy's eye. What happened to that guy? I said, that's the guy that won. Yeah, he got beat up, but yeah. Moving on, because Dan's got baseball to get to, and we're dragging like we always do. We got this one wrong. I blame Dan because I went in sight unseen on Benoit Saint-Denis. I didn't even know like what he looked like, but... He looked actually pretty good in this fight. And then he almost died in the second round, and the ref didn't stop it, and the ref didn't stop it, and the ref didn't stop it, and the ref didn't stop it. Not much else to say. Lazio Zelotsky Dos Santos picked apart Benoit Saint-Denis, who said Saint-Denis definitely looks like he belongs in the UFC if he survives yesterday. But horrific judges, not judges, ref's decision, and he rightfully got banned from refereeing the other fights on the night, but Saint-Denis looked good despite his face not looking good today, I'm sure.
Yeah, I will say this. The judges' scorecards kind of surprised me on this one, because first of all, they only gave Elias Zaleski Dos Santos one 10-8 round, which seems wrong. I think there were multiple 10-8 rounds in there. And second of all, did Benoit Saint-Denis not win the first round? Was I watching a different fight than other people? Like, I thought he won the first round.
Yeah, I thought he did.
Yeah, and they didn't give it to him. The reason that Zaleski Dos Santos has 29 was that weird accidental groin kick that immediately led to a point deduction. Like, the ref was trying to insert himself even further into a fight that he previously had not wanted to be in. It was weird. But I will say, Benoit Saint-Denis, is, like you said, as long as he's okay after all this, is going to – I think he's going to get the Chris Moutinho treatment, that people are just going to be all about this dude because he is wildly tough. And you know what? I'll say this. It was a terrible stoppage, right? Like, that should have been stopped 8 or 9 times. Every time the ref looked like he was going to step in, Denis threw two of the ugliest strikes you've ever seen in your whole life just to be like, nope, I'm still here. I'm still here. He wasn't still there. That's still –
Yes.
Like not yes, enough like, to not stop it. But like he was punching, still moving, dude.
No.
Yeah, he was still moving.
Yeah, he was. Well, he had no choice. He had to. No one was saving him. The ref was not doing his job, so he had to somehow save himself from dying. Yeah, the everyone only gave the second round 10-8. That could have been like 10-7, 10-6. Like that was pretty wild. But yeah, Saint-Denis looked like. Like I thought he won the first round, but we're praising him, and he got like utterly destroyed. His defense is definitely needs some work.
But again, Zaleski Dos Santos is called Capoeira because he has fun striking, and it's all over the place, and it's difficult to deal with.
Yep. So we got that one wrong. That was my second one wrong. Dan's third one wrong. We got this one right. I got thanked for this one. Thank you, people on Twitter. Plus 125, we got it at the time. Michael Oleksaychuk, is he actually a good fighter? Because he TKO'd Shamil Gamzatov. Pretty much, it went, another thing, I want to keep saying, it went the way we expected. But when it went the way we expected, his pressure was too much. But is he actually good, or is he just getting good matchups?
I think he's good. I don't believe this, but... So if you don't count the fact that his first ever UFC win was overturned due to a positive amphetamines test, I think, amphetamines test for him, he would be 5-2 in the UFC with wins over Khalil Roundtree, Jean Volante, Modestus Bukauskas, and his only losses are Jimmy Crute and OSP. Like he's probably a win or two away from, like, should we rank this guy in the top 15? Like, he looked good this time. I think the thing that plays really well for him is he's like the anti-Volkan Ozdemir. He just goes and gets it. And whether or not he gets hit or whether or not, like, he's not afraid. And it seems to be serving him really well. So, you know, mad props to him. He looks very different. I also, did you notice he changed his fight nickname going into this one?
Did he?
He's no longer,
I think I did notice that.
He's no longer Lord. He's
right.
Now,
yes, he's Lord.
He's now Husar, H-U-S-A-R, which I believe is a member of the like Polish army or the Polish cavalry, if my 2 seconds of Googling means anything. But yeah,
yes,
he's not Lord.
Correct. Yes, according to Google.
He's not Lord anymore, so that's whatever that means.
Huh. Seems like he's been demoted then, if you ask me, but anyhow. Yeah, he looked good. We got it right. Next fight. We almost got it right. This was our big, bothered me, very frustrating.
Really
we almost had it went the way we went the way we predicted it would go. Makwan Amirakani plus 260. This is our big one. Dominated the first round with his wrestling. Was starting to dominate the second round, and then he caught a knee diving in for a takedown. Got brutally knocked out by Lerone Murphy. So we whiffed on that. So we hit one. Michael O. Olosechuk. You can call him Michael O or whatever he is now. Dan said his nickname is. He's the only underdog we hit. We missed in St. Denis. We missed in Amirakani, but we were very close in Amirakani.
Yeah, not much to say on this one other than I think if you told me that this is how the fight went and gave me an opportunity to re-pick it when they fight in 2 months, were they to fight in 2 months? They're not going to fight in 2 months. But were they to fight in 2 months, I think I'd take Makwan Amirakani.
Yeah. Is he going to fight again in the UFC?
Ooh, he's really – here's what he's got going for him. So you're right. It is 3 straight losses. They are at a really great competition with the exception – I guess I don't know really how I feel about Camuela Kirk, but Edson Barboza and Lerone Murphy are good. His loss before that was to Shane Burgos. He's beaten Chris Fishgold, Danny Henry, Jason Knight. His other loss was a split to Arnold Allen. Like, he's got that going for him, good level of competition. The other thing he's got going for him that might earn him another one – he's all they got from Finland, and they're all about, like, checking the boxes and having a whole bunch of different markets, and he checks one of those. So, you know, Hu Yaozhong is still fighting in the UFC today, so.
I wouldn't mind seeing Hu Yaozhong fight again, actually. He was, kind of fun.
Pretty fun to watch, yeah.
But that fight, Andre Petrosky subbed him late in the third round, but probably lasted longer than we thought, and Yaozhong was way tougher than we expected, but. We got that one right, and Petrosky via submission probably was a prop bet that some people played. So that was minus 240 on that one. And then in the opener, Tagir Ulumbekov beat Alan Nascimento, split decision. Who do you think won the fight? Nascimento was way more active off his ground, off his back, but he was on his back pretty much for the whole fight. So the old thinking would be he lost, but new thinking would be, oh, actually he was, you know, going for submissions the whole time. So who did you have winning it?
So I think the right decision happened. I think Tagir Ulumbekov won. I do think he had to win it in, like, the last 2 minutes, though, because here's the thing that happened. He I think, won – or Alan Nascimento won the second round. It was clear cut. He won the second round. There was no offense by Ulumbekov. And then in the third round, Ulumbekov was, like, back in that moment again where he looked like he was just going to let – Nascimento shoot 700 different triangles and arm bars and omoplatas and stuff like that. And then he, like, changed his tenor and passed the guard and threw some punches, mostly because Khabib was yelling at him too. And I think that did enough to win the third round for me. Obviously not for one judge. It was funny to watch Twitter think Ulumbekov won 30-27, though. That killed me. Because he didn't. Yeah. No, he badly lost the second and nearly lost the third. So I think the ultimate decision was right, but it was damn close.
Yep. So that puts a bow in it. Attendance was 10,171 in Etihad Arena in Abu Dhabi. The other bonus winner I didn't mention was Hamzat Chimaev. So Chimaev and Glover were performance of the night, and then Jan Sandhagen were fight of the night. Very good night for our picks. I was 11-3 based on $100 bets. I was up about $188. Dan was 10-4, up about $57. On the year, I'm up to 59%, so I'm cruising right up to the 60% rate I wanted. Dan is up to 55 again. I have the money lead. It's almost $1,000 now, Dan. $900 or so lead over you. Come on.
That's all right.
You're it's choking right. down the stretch, dude.
I know there's 2 months before we reset, so I'm just, you know, I'll let you have your moment.
And the dreams of a quick episode have gone out the window, Dan.
That's okay. That's
we haven't okay. even gotten to contender series yet.
And I've got some hot contender series takes.
Do you? Do you have some hot Starbucks though with you?
I actually am drinking Starbucks right now. The wife re-arrived in the hotel room with she emerged with Starbucks and some
amazing
small snacks. I'm trying not to eat in your ear, but I am Starbucksing in your ear because I was drinking like that hotel coffee that tastes like dirty sock water. So I'm at least off that, and we're on the contender series now.
Amazing wife. Starbucks is not a sponsor, unfortunately, but Prediction Strike, which I can never say prediction for some reason. Prediction Strike is. Let me tell you about them. You wish you could have had stock in a guy like Patrick Mahomes or Christian McCaffrey. Well, now Prediction Strike makes that a real possibility. Prediction Strike is the only performance-based sports stock market where you can buy and sell shares of professional athletes as if they were stocks. It's like Robinhood and DraftKings had a baby. Prediction Strike lets fans create portfolios of their favorite athletes so they can make money and get even closer to the game. Don't just bet on your favorite players. Start investing in them. Simply download Prediction Strike's new and easy-to-use app from the App Store or sign up at PredictionStrike.com to create an account. Use code SGPNMMA, then deposit funds to buy, sell, and hold shares of your favorite players just like you would real stocks. The value of players will change based upon game performance and supply and demand. And you can trade your shares of players at any time as long as the player isn't currently in the game. Sign up with your promo code, once again, SGPNMMA, to receive a free athlete share with your first deposit of $20 or more. And you can head over to sportsgamblingpodcast.com. Dan just wrote an article on some of athletes in basketball and football he thinks you should invest on a Prediction Strike. And Dan knows his stuff, as he's shown on this show. And download our app if you haven't already, SGPN app. We're live in the App Store and Google Play. It gives you easy access to all our picks and podcasts. And if you can throw us up an app review, that would be amazing. And tell everybody what a great app it is, because it actually is a very good app. All right. Dan could have just taken this episode off since he has more important things to do right now, but you people should be thankful that he's here, because this is where he shines. This is probably why you had to show up, right? Because this is the last week of
it. It was week 10. I couldn't leave Superfan Jong or anybody else. And like I said, I've got hot takes for this one, and I've got some ones that I think people will be pretty excited about.
So thoughts on the card. Do you like the card? Is it a weak card? Are they going out with a whimper or a bang?
Comparatively to some of the other ones, not as good. But yeah. I think exciting and weird, which
Ooh,
is
fun.
Yeah. Weird is always a good time. And I think this has got, there's a good level of weirdness to this one.
All right. And there's a lot of Chinese Performance Center people once again, right?
There are three of them. Correct.
Yes. Which will make Zhang very angry. I guess he can bet against him.
He might be angry at some of my picks too.
Oh, really? All right. Do you know what the main event is? I've seen different sites list different main events.
It's Achilles Estrada-Murta versus Masha Shit.
Haha, I made Dan pronounce both names for me. lightweight. Masha Shit. His name's Masha Shit, but he just goes by Masha Shit. I know how to say Achilles. I guess it's not that hard. Estrada-Murta.
Estrada-Murta, yeah.
He is Canadian, everyone. Achilles Estrada-Murta. We finally have a Canadian.
We got two Canadians.
We have two back-to-back Canadians, which is impressive. Usually my fellow Canadians screw us over whether we pick them or against them. So really, there's not like a clear path to victory for us here. They tend to screw us either way. So that's Canadians for you. We act like we're nice, but really we're not. All right, Mahashate, or you call him Mahashite. I think he just wanted to swear is why you said that, correct? Or is it really
Mahashate?
Mahashate, yeah, I think I might be.
But but I don't know that that's correct. Don't quote me on Chinese pronunciation.
No. All right. Do you know? Have you watched both these gentlemen fight?
I've watched everybody on this card fight.
All right.
I did have to look up Justin Berlinson because I had forgotten him. I think on last show I told you Johan Lainese was a guy who I had my eye on because he looked really good at CFFC. And I was like, don't go out and bet on him yet because I haven't seen Berlinson. But we'll talk about that one in a second.
All right. So Mahashate, 5-1, 3 knockouts for his career. Never been finished. He's won 5 straight fights after dropping his debut. Used to fight at welterweight. This one's down at lightweight. 2 inches taller than Esther Madura and 7 years younger, plus 310. Esther Madura is 7-0 with 4 knockouts. The BFL champ in Canada. You know BFL, correct?
Yeah, that's a great promotion. Is it Battlefield Fight League?
Yeah, I think that's what it is.
Battlefield Fight League.
Yeah, I think it's out west, out in like the Alberta's area, I think, if I'm thinking of the right one.
Are you quizzing me on Canadian geography?
No, you don't know Canadian geography.
Their last event was in Vancouver, so there you go.
Yeah, there you go. It is out west. All right, he's at minus 400. Should he be that big of a favorite here, or he was when I did these?
He probably should be even bigger than that and probably will be even bigger than that in a minute. Yeah. Yeah, like
Dan is picking him. That's why.
Yeah,
right?
I'm gonna pick him. And look, he's like really light on his feet. The thing I really like about Achilles is that like he throws like 8,000% every single time he throws. He bounces in and out. He throws big shots. And he's fighting a guy. And what I've been able to see from Mahashe is that his hands are really low all the time. So you've got a guy who throws like 100% power and isn't afraid to get hit, and he's going to fight a guy whose hands are like down around the bottom of his rib cage all the time. I think he's just going to blast him like 2 seconds into this fight, and it's going to be over. This is a quintessential, like we're talking on Sunday, it's negative 400. It'll be negative 700 maybe by the time it gets to your ear.
So leaving his hands down, you could say, is his Achilles heel, Dan.
Hey.
Oh. All right. So Esther Madura is our pick. And we got Lainese versus Berlinson, as Dan mentioned earlier. That would be for welterweight. That would be Johan Lainese versus Justin Berlinson. Lainese, Canadian. Look out. Nicknamed White Lion. 7-0, 5 knockouts. CFFC champ, which we definitely know. That's in your neck of the woods, right, Dan?
Quite a bit south of me, but probably like only like 5 hours south of me.
There you go. Closer than Atlanta is to you, Dan.
Yes, correct.
He's got 2 inches of reach. 2 inches of reach over Berlinson. He is Canadian. I have in my scouting report here. Plus 210. Berlinson 6-0. So we got 2 undefeated fellows here. 2 knockouts, 4 submissions. So everything is a finish for him. He was also fought in Bellator, where he's 2-0. I think he's fought in LFA also, right? So he's got a lot of high-level experience.
For sure.
5 years younger than Lainese, minus 260. You going shock again?
I am going shock again. I said I had my eye on Lainese, but I rewatched Berwinson's early fights, too. It was actually a little bit harder to find his Bellator fight. I could have looked up his Cage Warriors fight, but I remembered most of him beating up David Baer. I believe that was part of the first trilogy when Cage Warriors did the back-to-back-to-back fight cards. But, like, what I saw looking at one of his old Bama fights is he is really, really, really sharp and technical on the feet. Part of what people like about Lainese is that he gets a little bit wild, he gets a little bit crazy, he gets in your face. But, like, I've seen him thwarted before, and not to a loss because he's undefeated, but, like, thwarted momentarily by people who are more technical than him, which is pretty much everybody. He throws these, like, wide-winging shots. But like occasionally those land, or he lands a goofy flying knee or something like that. But there are moments where like guys who are more technical than him, like Evan Cutts, shut him down for a little bit of time before he lands the big bomb. I think Berlinson is good enough to do that shutting down, but do it on a more permanent basis and just kind of beat Lainese here.
All right, there we go. Chalk again. Flyweights. Lan Kui, is that how you say this gentleman's name?
Or that's Kui how Lan? I'm going to say it.
Kui Lan versus. All right. Versus Arison Ferreira da Silva. Da Silva is gato, which means cat. And Kui Lund does not have a nickname that I know of. We'll go with Kui first. 13-7, 5 knockouts, 3 submissions. He has been knocked out 3 times. He's been submitted 2 times. He's won 2 straight fights. Whippy damn do. 2 straight fights, Dan. both via finish, though. That's a bit better. 2 inches taller, 6 years younger, plus 375. Gato, which means cat for Da Silva, is 10-1 with 10 knockouts. Never been finished in a fight. 4 straight wins for him. He's not fought since February of 2020, though, minus 500. All right, is this one of your crazy picks, Dan, or you go on and talk again?
This is one of my crazy picks. Really? I'm not only taking the biggest underdog on the card, but I'm taking the biggest underdog on the card coming out of the Performance Institute in China, which has been a big no-no in the past, right? They're 0-3 in Contender Series. They were 1-2 in that Jacksonville fight card. In general, they've looked bad, and maybe that's why Lun Kuei is coming in here. But Arison Ferreira, maybe this is more of a fade of him than anything else, but I watched his most recent fight against Lucas Rodriguez, and I don't think he was even really winning that fight. He got a doctor stoppage from, like, a bad cut, but, like, he wasn't doing most of the damage. I'll say this. He looks truly terrible on his feet. He doesn't look like a good striker. I think his path to victory here is to take down Lun Kuei, who I've noticed in the fights I've seen of his has really good takedown defense. So I think as long as he keeps his feet, he's way faster, way sharper on the feet. And especially if I'm looking for value plays on this card, and I see a guy who's been off at negative 300, and we've seen these numbers on Contender Series. You see these guys at negative 350 or negative 400, and then they just balloon up to negative 1,000. Yep. I wouldn't be surprised if that happens with Kuei. If I'm making this wager, I might wait until almost, you know, Tuesday afternoon or Tuesday evening, see if this guy is plus 600. Because I'll tell you what, I think he's got the skills to tag him on the feet. I think he's got the skills to win a stand-up battle here. He's faster. As long as he avoids the ground with Ferreira, I think he's going to win this fight. And so get that big dog money when you can.
All righty. Featherweights. Kanan Kawaihe? Kawaihe?
That sounds right to me, yeah.
It's like Kawhi Leonard with hey at the end of it, Kawhi Hey, versus Jonas Bilharino. Bilharino, is that right?
Bilharino? Yeah, that Bilharino. Sounds right, yeah.
I'm not butchering things. That's disappointing, isn't it?
I'm a little bit bummed that this whole card has nothing that you managed to butcher, although there's one more that you could. And no hard Brazilian R in there, too.
Nope. Bilharino is nicknamed Shiva. He's 8-1-1, 6 knockouts, 1 submission. His one loss came via knockout. His last win was via knockout, but that was way back in October of 2019, plus 110. Kawaihe, 6-1 with 1 no contest, 1 knockout, 4 submissions. Never been finished in a fight. He's won 2 straight fights. He fought in Bellator where he's 1-0. He also fought in the Contender Series where he lost his fight. Who did he lose to?
He lost to Chase Hooper.
Okay, very good. No shame there. He's 1 inch taller, 7 years younger, minus 130. Who we got here?
I think I like Kawhi. The reason I like him is because, you know, that loss to Chase Hooper maybe aged worse than you would think it did. Because he got out grappled by him. And when you get out grappled by Chase Hooper, and then you see all these guys in the UFC not get out grappled by Chase Hooper, it looks kind of bad. But I think that seems to be his only big weakness, is that, like, maybe his takedown defense is not as good as we think it is. And then he followed that up by picking up a very quick submission win on somebody who shot a fast takedown on him last time, sunk in a ninja choke, put him to sleep in, like, I think 20 seconds or something like that in LFA. So I think he's working on that. And in addition to that, I don't think look at that. Now you're saying him right and I'm saying him wrong. What is wrong with the word? Bilharino, he's not the type of guy who's going to take you down. He wants to strike. He's a little bit sloppier than Kawhi on the feet as well. So, yeah, I like Kawhi, and I think negative 130 is a nice number to get him at, too. This is one of the ones where if I told you, you know, go get the number while it's here, that might be one of the ones I tell you to go get the number while it's here, because I don't know that it will stay down at negative 130.
So you heard, go get the number while it's here, everybody. And then we got opener flyweights, Zifa Shang versus Juan Puerta. Puerta is lead feather, and Shang is Dongbai Flying Tiger. Amazing. Amazing. Shang, 13. These two have a lot of experience. Shang, 32-7, 4 knockouts, 19 submissions. He's got 20 straight wins. He won via KO his last fight, plus 165. I take it he's not performance center with that much experience under his belt?
You know, I think he's probably he's got all of that experience, and I can't tell you this for sure because I don't know I don't know anything about the Chinese Performance Center. I don't think they let us know anything about the Chinese Performance Center. I think he probably, if you look at his record, you know, like all of the guys in the Chinese Performance Center seem to fight out of WLF.
Right.
And if you look at his record, he's got a whole bunch of wins and a whole bunch of regional promotions like Chinwu Men MMA.
Of course.
But then right when the Performance Center opens, he starts fighting for WLF.
Okay.
I'm guessing a lot of that time was not with the Chinese Performance Center, but I think since he's moved there.
Okay, gotcha. And then Poirita, Leadfeather, 22-6, one knockout, 12 submissions. So we got a couple submission guys going up against each other. He's won 11 straight fights. He won via submission his last fight. 2 inches taller, 5 inches of reach, 2 years younger, -180. Are you taking Shang? Because you mentioned that you're going to go with a couple of people that Zhang may not want to pick.
I am going with Shang here, and really? I think this is one that I think people should give more look to, because Shang, first of all, he's a kickboxer too. Mentioned all the submissions. He looks really, truly good on the feet, and he's got some really good wins in there. I know we're like digging a little bit deeper into his record to see this, because it is a long record. But you've seen in the UFC how good Shalgas Shumagulov has looked. Shalgas Shumagulov got beat by Shang back in the day. And it was long ago. It was like 5 years ago, but like not all that long ago in the grand scheme of things. And we just watched Shumagulov go in there and just destroy Jerome Rivera. He's got a win over Tahir Lambakov. He's got a win over Ali Bagoitinov. He's got a win over Tyson Nam. But he doesn't have a win over Shang. Right, like Shang went out there and dealt with Shumagulov's wrestling, out kickboxed him, wrestled him himself. He's fast and really good. The thing about Puerta for me, I think if Puerta can get it to the mat, it becomes more of a 50-50 fight. But if it stays standing, I really like Shang here. So with him being plus money and at worst this being a 50-50 fight, I think the smart money here is on Shang too. And look at that. 2 Chinese Performance Institute picks.
Wow. And they're big. Both dogs also. Any props, parlays, anything that needs to be mentioned or not?
Yeah, I think if you are looking for a prop to make one of these sweeter, and I don't have the numbers in front of me because I don't see them posted yet, but Achilles Estramadura should be a finish prop. Take him by TKO. Take him by TKO as quickly as you possibly can. That seems like a no-brainer to me. I would also take Kenan Kawai inside a distance. I think he's going to finish Jonas Bilardo no matter where it goes. Like, I think he could do it on the feed. I think he could submit him. I think both of those are smart finish props. And if I was looking to parlay, which obviously you guys love to do as well, we can't do the big, you know, 10-1, but I think Burlington should be the cornerstone to any parlay that you start. And Kenan Kawai sort of makes sense to pair him with, too, because if you put, you know, the numbers you quoted me on those two together, you're going to get it at, like, plus 150. And those two seem like maybe two of the safer picks on the card, with the exception of, obviously, Achilles, who's negative 400 and will be negative 1,000 by the time you actually get him. So, that'd probably be my play for Contender Series.
Excellent. Who's getting contracts?
That's a great question. I sort of assume Achilles will, because he's going to come out and just throw like a wild man. It would be a bad choice on the UFC's part to pass on Burlington, but he almost kind of feels like who is the other British guy they passed on? Brandon, I'm going to say his last name line. It looks like Log Magny, but it's not.
Lochner. I think it's something like that.
Yeah, you say something that is clearly not what the letters are saying. But, like,
no.
Burlington almost Lognane? Feels like that. Like, Lognane? It looks like Lognane. I know it's not Lognane. Burlington looks like that guy. He, like, is going to be really technical and smart, but, like, kind of fun. And he's also probably going to shoot some, like, safety takedowns to beat a guy who's, like, a wild brawler. And he's not going to brawl with the wild brawler. It would be wrong for the UFC to pass on him, but I almost feel like they might. I would say my sure things are Achilles and Kawhi should both get contracts. And then the other ones, it sort of depend on just how good they look. He does love signing somebody who got a big upset win, and both of the two Chinese fighters who I did pick are flyweights, and he's also always talking about needing flyweights. So, if they do pull off the upsets, they do seem like safe picks to win contracts.
Plus, it would be finally one of our performance people won. It's definitely give him a contract. So,
yeah,
I can see that happening. Yeah. All right. You greedy listeners have taken enough of Dan's day away from him. Like, he's trying to chill in Hotlanta. And is it hot in Hotlanta right now, Dan?
No, it's actually quite cold here. It was like 50 this morning or something like that. Yeah, it's not warm at all.
As cold as the Astros bats, perhaps, Dan?
I'd like him to be a little colder if possible.
A little colder.
Especially Altuve. Altuve could be a little colder if we need
him. Do you have good seats tonight? I haven't asked you that.
No, I can't afford good seats unless more of my picks start hitting.
Yes, it's true. How did you get tickets to begin with? Wasn't it sold out?
No. Secondary market? I actually didn't have to wind up even going to the secondary market. If you're a Braves fan, you get like the Braves fan letter, and it's like there's still a couple of seats left for Braves newsletter people only, and I got in the waiting room, and it was like, they like randomly assign you a number, and my number was insanely low, luckily.
Amazing. Hopefully the luck continues tonight, and Dan gets his World Series victory. And then hopefully we'll see you on TV running on the field and beating the media and afterwards ripping, tearing the town apart. So hopefully we'll see that. That's enough. Get in on all those picks of Dan, especially Achilles. Get in on those now. It's like you hear this, and if you're listening to us on the MMA Gambling podcast feed, then you can get in on it right away because you got this as soon as we dropped it. Make sure you come back on Wednesday where we'll have picks for another pay-per-view. We're back with another pay-per-view already, UFC 268 from MSG, the UFC's annual trip to New York. And we'll tell you how great we did on the Contender Series, and hopefully we'll have ideas on how we're going to fill our Contender Series spot in our podcast rather than just rambling about nonsense. So follow me, Jeff Fox, writer, on Twitter, and thank me for my picks, please. And follow Gumby Vreeland on Twitter. Read our stuff, sportsgamblingpodcast.com and MMA-manifesto.com. And Dan will take us home, Danimal.
I'm Daniel Gumby Vreeland. He is, let's go back to Juicy Jeff Fox, and we'll see you on Wednesday.